Why do you say that? Nahoot challenged him angrily. What do you know about Egyptology? I have spent 25 years... Wait! Von Schiller silenced him peremptorily. Let him finish. He looked at Nogo. Go on, Colonel. I agree that I don't know anything about Egyptian tombs, but these photographs were taken in a Christian church. What makes you so sure? Nahoot demanded bitterly, his authority challenged. Let me explain to you that I was ordained as a priest 15 years ago. Later, I became disillusioned with Christianity and all other religions and left the church to become a soldier. I tell you this so that you may believe that I know what I am talking about. He smiled with supercilious malice at Nahoot before going on. Look at this first print again, and you will be able to make out on the wall in the background, near the corner of the grill gate, the outline of a human hand and the stylized picture of a fish. Those are symbols of the Coptic Church. You can see them reproduced in any church or cathedral in the land. Each of them peered at their own copy of the same print, but none of them ventured an opinion until von Schiller had given his. Yeah, you are right, von Schiller said softly. There is, as you say, the hand and the fish. But I assure you the hieroglyphics on the stele and the murals and the wooden coffin are all Egyptian. Nahoot defended himself stoutly. I would stake my life on it. Nogo shook his head and began to argue. I know what I am saying. Von Schiller held up his hand to silence them both while he considered the problem. At last he came to some decision. Colonel Nogo, show me on the satellite photograph the site of Quentin Harper's camp where you obtained these Polaroids. Nogo stood up and came around the table to stand beside von Schiller. He leaned over the satellite photograph and prodded his forefinger at the spot near where the Dandera River joined the Nile. The photograph had once been in the possession of Quentin Harper, and had been captured in the raid on his camp. There were numerous markings in coloured marker pen on the copy, which Nogo presumed had been placed there by the Englishman. It was here, sir. You can see that Quentin Harper has marked the spot with a green circle. Now show me where the nearest Coptic church is situated. Why, Herr von Schiller, it is right here. Again, Quentin Harper has marked it with red ink. It is situated only a mile from the campsite, the monastery of St. Frumentius. There is your answer, then, von Schiller was still frowning. Coptic and Egyptian symbols together. The monastery. They stared at him, none of them daring to question his conclusion. I want that monastery searched, he said softly. I want every room and every inch of every wall examined. He turned back to Nogo. Can you get your men in there? Of course, Herr von Schiller. I already have one of my reliable men in the monastery. One of the monks is in my pay. Added to that, there is still martial law in force here in Goyam. I am the military commander. I am fully empowered to search for rebels and dissidents and bandits wherever I suspect they may be sheltering. Will your men enter a church to perform their duty? Helm wanted to know. Do you personally have any religious scruples? It may be necessary to, how can I put it, desecrate hallowed premises. I have already explained to you that I have renounced religion for other more worldly beliefs. I would take pleasure in destroying such superstitious and dangerous symbols as will certainly be found in the monastery of St. Frumentius. As for my men, I will select only Muslims or animists who are hostile to the cross and all it stands for. I will lead them personally. I assure you that there will be no difficulty in that respect. How will you explain this to your superiors in Addis Ababa? I do not want to be associated in any way with your actions at the monastery, von Schiller said. I have been ordered by the High Command in Addis to take all possible steps against the dissident rebels that are operating in the Abay Gorge. I will be completely able to justify any search of the monastery. I want that, Steely. I want it at any cost. Do you understand me, Colonel? I understand you perfectly, Herr von Schiller, As you already know, I am a generous man to those who serve me well. Bring it to me in good condition, and you will be well rewarded. You may call on Mr. Helm for any assistance that he can give you, including the use of Pegasus equipment and personnel. If we are able to use your helicopter, it will save a great deal of time. I can take my men down there tomorrow, and if this stone is in the monastery, I will be able to deliver it to you by tomorrow evening. Excellent. You will take Dr. Gudabi with you. He must search the area for other valuables and translate any inscriptions or engravings that you find in the monastery. Please provide him with military uniform. He must appear to be one of your troopers. I do not want to become involved in your recriminations at a later date. We will leave as soon as it is light enough to take off tomorrow morning. I will commence the arrangements immediately. Tuma Nogo saluted von Schiller and strode eagerly from the hut. Although Colonel Nogo had never entered either the Quiddist or the Makadas, he had often visited the monastery of St. Frumentius. He was therefore fully aware of the magnitude of the task ahead of him, and the likely reaction of the monks and the congregation to his forced entry to their premises. In addition, he was familiar with numerous similar rock cathedrals in other parts of the country. In fact, he had been ordained in the famous cathedral of Lalibalela, so he knew just how labyrinthine one of these subterranean warrens could be. He estimated that he would need at least 20 men to secure and search the monastery, and to fend off the outraged retaliation of the abbot and his monks. He selected his best men personally. None of them was squeamish. 2 hours before dawn, he paraded them within the security of the Pegasus compound, under the glare of the floodlights, and briefed them carefully. At the end of the briefing, he made each man step from the ranks in turn and recite his orders to ensure there was no misunderstanding. Then he inspected their arms and equipment meticulously. Tuma Nogo was painfully conscious of his own culpability in allowing the Englishman and the Egyptian woman to escape, and he could sense the danger in Herr von Schiller's attitude towards him. He had few illusions about the consequences if he were to fail again. In the short time since he had made the acquaintance of Gotthold von Schiller, Nogo had come to fear him as he had never feared God or the devil in the days of his priesthood. He realized that this raid was an opportunity to reinstate himself with the formidable little German. The jet ranger was standing by, the pilot at the controls, the engines running and the rotors turning lazily, but it could not carry such a large number of fully equipped men. It would need 4 round trips to ferry them all down to the assembly point in the gorge. Nogo flew with the first flight and took Nahut Gudabi with him. The helicopter dropped them 3 miles from the monastery, in a clearing on the banks of the Dandera River, the same drop area as they had used for the raid on Quentin Harper's camp. The drop area was just far enough from the monastery for the engine noise of the jet ranger not to alarm the monks. Even if they did hear it, Nogo was banking on the probability that they were by this time thoroughly conditioned to the frequent sorties of the machine, and would not associate it with any threat to themselves. The men waited in the darkness, warned to silence, and not even allowed by Nogo to smoke, while the jet ranger ferried in the remaining troopers. When the last flight came in, Nogo ordered his detachment to fall in, and led them in single file down the path beside the river. They were all trained bush fighters in top physical condition, and they moved swiftly and purposefully through the night. Only Nahut was a soft urbanite, and within half a mile he was wheezing and whining for a chance to rest. Nogo smiled vindictively to himself as he listened to Nahut's pathetic whispered pleas for mercy as he was prodded along by the men behind him. Nogo had timed his arrival at the monastery to coincide with the hour of matins and lauds, the break of day. He led his contingent down the cliff staircase at a trot. Their weapons were at high port. All the equipment was carefully muted so as not to clatter or creak, and their rubber-soled paratrooper boots made little noise on the stone paving as they hurried along the deserted cloisters to the entrance of the underground cathedral. From the interior echoed the monotonous chanting and drumming of the ceremony, punctuated at intervals by the higher treble descant of the abbot leading the service. Colonel Nogo paused outside the doors, and his men drew up in double ranks behind him. There was no need for orders, for his briefing had covered every aspect of the raid. He looked the men over for a moment, then nodded at his lieutenant. The outer chamber of the church was empty, as the monks were gathered in the middle chamber, the quiddist. Nogo crossed the outer nave swiftly, with his detachment moving up close behind him. Then he ran up the steps to the wooden doors of the quiddist, which stood open. As he entered, his men fanned out in two files behind him and swiftly took up their positions along the sides of the walls of the quiddist, their assault rifles cocked and locked, and with bayonets fixed, covering the kneeling congregation. It was done so silently and swiftly that it was some minutes before the monks gradually became aware of this alien presence in their holy place. The chanting and drumming died away, and the dark faces turned apprehensively towards the ranks of armed men. Only Jalihora, the ancient abbot, was unaware of anything untoward happening. Completely absorbed in his devotions, he continued kneeling before the doors of the Maqdas, the Holy of Holies, his quavering voice the lonely cry of a lost soul. In the silence, Colonel Nogo marched down the centre of the nave, kicking the kneeling monks out of his way. When he came up behind Jalihora, he seized him by his skinny black shoulder and threw him roughly to the ground. The tinsel crown flew from his silvered pate and rolled across the slabs with a brassy clatter. Nogo left him sprawling and turned to face the rows of monks in their white shamas, addressing them imperiously in Amharic. "I'm here to search this church and the other buildings of this monastery, on suspicion that there are dissident rebels and other bandits harboured here." He paused and surveyed the cowering holy men haughtily and threateningly. "I must warn you that any attempt to prevent my men performing their duties will be regarded as an act of banditry and provocation. It will be met with force." Jalihora crawled to his knees and then, using one of his embroidered hangings for support, slowly hoisted himself to his feet. Still clinging to the tapestry of the Virgin and Child, he gathered himself with an effort. "These are hallowed precincts," he cried in a surprisingly clear and strong voice. "We are dedicated to the service and worship of Almighty God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost." "Silence!" Nogo bellowed at him. He unbuckled the flap of the webbing holster on his hip and placed his hand threateningly on the grip of the Tukarev pistol it contained. Jalihora ignored the threat. "We are holy men in a place of God. There are no shufta here. There are no lawbreakers amongst us. In the name of God the Most High, I call upon you to be gone, to leave us to our prayers and our worship, and not to desecrate—" Nogo drew the pistol, and in the same movement swung the black steel barrel into the abbot's face with a vicious backhanded blow. Jalihora's mouth burst open like the rind of a ripe pomegranate. The red juice burst from his crushed lips and flooded down the front of his tattered velvet vestments. A low moan of horror went up from the ranks of squatting monks. Still clinging to the tapestry, Jalihora kept his feet, but he was swaying and teetering wildly. He opened his shattered mouth to speak again, but the only sound that came from it was a high-pitched cawing, like that of a dying crow, and the blood splattered in bright droplets from his lips. Nogo laughed and kicked his legs from under him. Jalihora collapsed like a heap of dirty laundry and lay on the paving, groaning in his own blood and spittle. "There is your god now, you old baboon. Bleat to him as loud as you will, and he will never answer you," Nogo chuckled. With the pistol, he gestured to his lieutenant across the church. He left six of his men guarding the monks, four at the doorway and one at each side wall. The others bunched up and followed him to the entrance of the Maqdas. The doors were locked. Nogo rattled the ancient padlock impatiently. "Open this immediately, you old crow," he shouted at Jalihora, who still lay in a bundle, moaning and sobbing. "He is too far gone in senility," the lieutenant shook his head. "His mind is gone, Colonel. He does not understand the command." "Break it open, then," Nogo ordered. "No, don't waste any more time. Shoot the lock away. The wood is rotten." Obediently, the lieutenant stepped up to the door and gestured his men to stand well clear. He aimed his AK-47 into the wood of the door and fired a long, continuous burst. Dust and chips of wood and stone flew in a cloud, and fresh yellow splinters splattered the paving. The noise of gunfire and the whine of ricochets was deafening in the echoing hall of the Quiddist, and the monks wailed and howled and covered their ears and their eyes where they knelt. The lieutenant stepped back from the shattered door. The black wrought-iron hasp and staple hung at an angle, the supporting woodwork almost shot through.